Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent, that ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 50. We've been doing this podcast for a year, and what a year it has been for us and for Gwent. Today, Grey Boxer and I discuss the big items, Gwent Open, the big patch, as well as a visit from the Gwent Open champion, Shaggy. It's been the most interesting and intense week for the game, and with a hotfix coming, the chips are still falling. Join us for our birthday, my friends, on this episode of Commander's Horn. Welcome back to Commander's Horn, a weekly Gwent podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I am joined once again, as always, by my co-host, the Midnight Viking himself, Grey Boxer. It's episode 50. I just got back from vacation. There's a mountain of stuff to talk about, and you've all been waiting for a podcast, so that's what we're going to give you. Our takes on one of the biggest weeks Gwent has ever had. How does that sound, Grey Boxer?
Cue the kazoo sound for our episode 50 celebration. I misplaced my kazoo. I have a duck call somewhere, McBeard. I can't seem to locate it. So we'll go with
one job, Grey Boxer. One job.
I forgot the kazoo, but I'll tell you what, getting into this week and the past week and even going back as far as Gwent Open sounds as refreshing as the soft, cool rain lightly running down the dark cloak of Leo Bonhart. Sounds like Berna Brand weathering a Skellige storm. In short, I'd say, McBeard, sounds pretty good, man. Welcome back to you, and welcome back, everybody, to the 50th episode. We've been grinding our dwarven axes, and we got a thunderbolt of a show for you today, guys.
And this show, this episode of Commander's Horn is recorded in the Commander's Horn studio, as we do. You can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. Follow us on Twitter at Commander's Horn for all updates about the show, and feel free to email us your feedback or your questions, comments, discussion topics, commandershornpodcast@gmail.com.
This episode of Commander's Horn is brought to you by our sponsor, Unseen Elder Security, for when the gate must be secure. Our Commander's Horn is not supported by any unseen security guards. It's supported by our commandos. Your support keeps the mics on and the cast ad-free.
It's been a year of Commander's Horn. Seems like just yesterday I was buying a mic off eBay and casting from my kitchen table. I posted the first episode and was invited to the Gwent Discord shortly after. Shout out to Mythic Pilot. Less than 50 people were there at the time. We were all excited for Gwent's release, talking about everything we could possibly talk about. Gameplay had just come out. Gameplay footage had just come out from Gamescom 2016. Gwent DB would yet to be supplied with the first full card list, and we would yet to experience Gwent gameplay for the first time, get hands-on gameplay for the first time from Kill the Servers. We didn't even know who all the leaders would be at the time. Now we have already entered public beta, have had two major CD Projekt Red sanctioned tournaments, and a community that continues to grow. We've been gone for a week, and it feels like a lifetime. We have so much to talk about, so let's talk about everything.
You're totally right, man. And it's really good to think about how far the game has really come in just a year. And it's been a year for us. We're celebrating this more or less as about the year, right? And it's 50 episodes, give or take, your weekly Gwent podcast. Maybe we've missed one or two weeks for vacations and holidays. But, this is a special episode for us because, we've been there from the beginning, from before it was even really, it was a nebulous idea, Kill the Servers. It was a feather in our hopeful caps. It was not something we were ready to really be sure of what we were going to embark upon. And, 50 episodes later for McBeard and 45 for me or so, I just want to say thank you to everyone who's listened. And I want to say thank you to McBeard for hosting these because he's done a heck of a lot of work. And a lot of work has also been done by the guys who make Gwent. And it's really been a huge, huge, huge swing from the cards we saw at Kill the Servers back when you could have a bunch of Bronze Scorches and the balancing and everything that's been happening. But before we get into that, I kind of want to talk about the end of the season, McBeard, because we both had kind of like a clustered end of season with activities and vacations. So I wanted to know, how did everything turn out for you?
Yeah, the end of the season was tough. It was tough for me because I left for Poland on the 22nd of August, which was it was 6 full days before the end of the season, but didn't have a lot of time to actually commit to getting rank. And I did my very best. Unlike you, Gray Boxer, who secured his frame and name in the top 1,000. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. I was going to say, it's a similar story to what McBeard had maybe about 20 episodes ago. a very, very harrowing experience.
Yeah, you know, you're watching your position, you're watching the clock, you're looking at the floor of MMR and how, you know, can I just not play anymore and still get the border? And I think in my situation, I had to play one game. You got pushed out, so you played a game without like really risking losing anything. So, and you got it. You got that frame. It looks good on you. And, you know, we got our rank needed. We're going to get a taste of pro ladder, which is nice as well. And it really came down. It was actually really hard at the end. I was getting really pressed for time. I was getting a little salty, getting a little tilted here and there. And I think it wasn't until I was just too tired to care when I just kind of just got there. And I got a lot of assistance from the Commander's Horn team, Delta and A-. We talked a lot about it. Gray Boxer, you and I talked a lot about it. And we got there. And we're just waiting. We're waiting for that ranked. We're waiting for that pro ladder to get started. One of the things we're going to talk about. One of the many things we're going to talk about. In fact, there's so much to talk about that we're going to be foregoing a strategy discussion this week. But given the massive overhaul in mechanics, cards, and archetypes, we know there's going to be so much to discuss in the future. We're going to get back on that 5-faction tour because there's tons of new cards, tons of new ways to play the game. We're going to scratch the surface, but there's some big, big stuff to talk about. So let's get into that right about now.
All right, McBeard, let's talk about the Gwent Open. Let's talk about the tournament itself, the setup, and the casting. I think that you guys did an excellent job. I really was happy to see the addition of merchants. And in general, it was a really tightly run event with some excellent competition. So let's talk about it.
Yeah, Merchant was added to the casting team of myself and Mega Mogwai, who is reprising his role from Challenger, as I was as well. And
reprising his role as like the most over-the-top 11 out of 10 excitement hype caster.
Games need casters like him, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. you need someone like that. And I think that the casting team, like the three of us right now, it's like you get a little bit of everything for sure. Like Merchant's hyper analytical. He really sees a lot. He's got a lot to say. Mogwai's got a lot of hype. And I think we all did a really good job. I was really, really proud of the cast. I thought that, you know, it was really clean. Day two was smoother than day one. Generally, it was really good. I feel like we called the games well. Thought the actual result and the actual games we saw were fantastic. Some of the decks that were brought. We did see a lot of expected stuff, but we saw a lot of surprises as well. I think Super JJ's decks were super exciting. And of course, let's talk about Shaggy in a bit, but Shaggy's performance as the wild card, absolutely fantastic. But yeah, we'll go in chronological order here. We'll talk about Gwent Open first. Feels like a lifetime ago that I left, and I got there, got to Poland on the 23rd on the Wednesday, rehearsal on the 24th, right down to business. It was early in the day though, 12 p.m. Central European Standard Time. Did you enjoy getting up at 6 a.m. to watch the cast, Gray Boxer?
I'll tell you what, I got up at about 7. I'm not going to lie. And it's a thing about having an international tournament with a bunch of fans across the world, right? So it wasn't as early for you as it was for me. But there's a couple of things that I actually wanted to talk about quickly with you. As a caster of the tournament, McBeard, something you mentioned on stream today was really interesting. You said that you had a pronunciation coach for a couple of the cards, and can you kind of break that down for us a little bit? Because on the Commander's Horn podcast, we tend to mispronounce as much as possible. So, you know, Jean Calvé, I believe, is how I pronounced the Nilfgaardian leader once I first saw him. But can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I can tell you that we were told to hit that T. It is Jean Calvet. John Calvet. I think is correct. But That was one of the things. Yeah, we actually got to work with... oh, by the way, the time zone thing, not only just international, but also Gamescom schedule. Generally, I don't think we'll be getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to watch these things in the future. We'll see. But I know Gamescom scheduling had something to do with it. But yeah, we were joined by one of the guys that helped us out, Travis from CD Projekt Red. He's a really cool guy, actually. He's American born. I think he studied Polish. He studied Polish in Ohio, I believe. And he works with a lot of adaptation Polish to English. And you know, there's a lot of guys in the studio that work on that kind of stuff. So we sat down with him because we went through all the pronunciation to make sure that for the most part we were right on. There were some debatable things, I think. And then we had a second source, and I actually cannot forget that guy's name. Sorry, I can't quite remember that guy's name at the time because we only talked to him for a short time. But we did get some clarification on some of the hot topic pronunciation things like Ethna. There is, I think, a lot of people know that if you spell a name like that and you're looking at kind of, I believe, Irish history, you would call her Anya. But in the game, it is still understood that she is Ethna, even with, you know, the general understanding that it could be Anya. And I don't think anybody is wrong when you say Anya. And I believe a lot of I've seen a linguist in Reddit. I believe his name is Bob the Serb. He has had a lot of input on Reddit on how things should be pronounced. But I believe just for the sake of the game and the sake of kind of the world, it is a fantasy world. You can kind of make the rules as you go along. It's Ethna. It's John Calvet. It's Tibor and not Tibor.
What about Dagon? Is it Dagon or Dagon?
It's Dagon. I think we settled on Dagon. Yeah. On that one. Yeah, if you have any other ones, I can.
I mess that one up all the time. I was gonna say if you say Enya one more time, an Irishman's gonna show up and get punched out.
Why?
Why? Conor McGregor? Anybody?
Oh no, that's an Irishman. I don't want to punch.
Show up and get punched out.
Don't punch me out, Conor McGregor. Yeah, little things like that. I'm trying to think of what are the big ones that we saw. Joaquim the Vet was there are two takes on that one. I think that one's going to always be like the most nebulous and weird one for me. I think we settled on Joachim, but it's kind of like Vacher de Rideau. It's like it's French, but it's not French. It's Nilfgaardian, right? It's not French. It's not Dutch. It's not, you know, it's not anything really. However it is. And the thing that people who get really twisted up about it, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're we're trying our best. But I think we did a good job with that part.
Yeah. I thought that was very interesting, and that's something that, you know, is very relevant to our podcast.
Yeah, for sure. But the tournament itself, I think it went really well. If you don't understand the format, this is a tournament that happened on the 25th, 26th at Gamescom. 7 people were chosen at the top of the global ladder with a cutoff of August 1st, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then a wild card was determined on the day before, on the Thursday, the 24th. Wild card was Shaggy was taking on Vaish in a very intense match that we were rehearsing, but we were like taking breaks. It's like, do we have an update on the match? Do we have an update on the match? How's Shaggy doing? How's Vaish doing? So it was really, really right down to the wire. And, you know, we've seen Vaish perform in a lot of like the Gwendolyn Opens tournament and chatted with him at Discord a lot. So, you know, there was a little hope in there. But it turns out Shaggy is a dominant, dominant player, and it was a pleasure to watch him play and take out a lot of great players in the process. And you know, it's what did you think about Shaggy's play? I mean, when we got to finally see him in the tournament, he made short work of almost everybody he played.
Yeah, that's the oddest thing is the wild card tournament that on the first day of the Gwent Open was Vaish versus Shaggy, and I think Vaish is the only person in the entire tournament to take Shaggy to 5 games. Everybody else got 3-0'd or 3-1 by Shaggy in the best of 5 conquest format. But yeah, I think I gave my reaction to Shaggy winning to the my special reaction to the Commander's Horn Commandos in the Discord, but I'll tell you, man, it came as no surprise. Shaggy has been super consistent on the ladder. He's always been way up there. And I think he was position number 9 when the top 7 qualified for the Gwent Open. So I don't think that it was a huge surprise. But yeah, he was really going well, and I think he snagged, ended up snagging himself an invite to the Challenger.
He did. Him and Jorah, both the finalists, are both going to be at the next Gwent Challenger, which is, I believe, more or less confirmed to happen in December. So there will be a Gwent Challenger in December, and he, along with Jorah and Life Coach, who gets an invite back, will be at the Challenger. The rest of the players, that's TBD. I guess we're probably going to get more information on that when the pro ladder
yeah.
Is released, and we can kind of see, you know, who is willing to make the commitment to, you got to dump a lot of games into the pro ladder, I think, before you even get a placement. I mean, we're going to have to see how it all plays out when it's actually implemented. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think it's being installed today, McBeard. I don't know about you, but I've had a little bit of server instability playing Gwent today. This is, we're recording on Monday, September 4th. And, yeah, it's been a little bit wonky, and I wonder if they're doing some work in the background to get the pro ladder ready. We talked about this before, but we know it's going to be a little bit delayed, so we were expecting it on the 1st. But we can talk a little bit about the viewership, I think, of the Gwent Open stream. It looked to have exceeded that of the Challenger in terms of raw viewership numbers, and I think that really bodes well for the popularity of Gwent and its competitive scene.
It absolutely did not, though. It did not. We didn't see. I mean, I'm not saying that it was by any means not watched by very many people. Lots of people took it in. I think we had 10K max at some
12K.
Point on 12K max on the Saturday, and like 7 or so on the Friday. The time zone did probably play a part in that a little bit, on the fact that a lot of people were probably at work or not awake yet on the Friday. But
you're right. It was. I was looking at the most recent stream with the balance patch, and it is 12K. And
that, that stream was. I have never seen a 2-minute and 30-second slow mode be so dominated by a Twitch chat in my life. That was a crazy stream.
Yeah, and the other one, the May 13th, right, was the. Oh, never mind. I guess we did hit like 16K. Yeah, and with the Conquest format specifically, we really got to enjoy a wide spread of deck archetypes, and it really showcased the many paths to victory that you can have as a Gwent player, especially at the highest competitive level. And there's a couple other things that the tournament ended up showcasing that maybe CD Projekt Red didn't want to see. It turns out that there's a, coming as a surprise to no one, there is a statistical advantage of going second in Gwent. It's called winning the coin flip by most of us. It turns out that 72% of the players in the Gwent Open who won the coin flip went on to win the match. And I think, McBeard, that's extraordinary. In a situation where hundreds of cards are variable and deck archetypes are different and you have anti-mill in there and all kinds of different sort of teched in cards and multiple matchups, I mean, to have this single statistic poking out as far as it does is insane to me. It was evident also in the Gwent Challenger, right? There were similar statistics where the person who went second ended up winning well over 65% or almost 70% of their matches. So I think that the community in Gwent is really tuned into the advantage of winning the flip. And I think that everybody's ready to see a change, but I think that that's something we're hoping to see soon, especially with these huge prizes on the line.
I mean, the coin flip is a lightning rod of it really attracts a lot of attention, I think, by the community. And I think generally when you're playing ladder for the everyman, I think that there are bigger decisions that cost or grant you a win in regular play. And I think that people are probably over exaggerating as far as their own personal experiences with it. But at a high level, it is a little harder to ignore. And I'm not talking about any games I play. We're talking about the tournament here. So yeah, at a high level, I mean, sample size, not very big here. And I would love to know actually Shaggy's specific coin flip stats. I don't have them on hand. I don't think we're going to cut the recording so I can just double check it. But I do think that it's hard when playing the last card is so important. You're playing a card that your opponent has no response to. Now you can switch it up with spies, but everybody was playing spies, and the tournament wasn't full of people that were like, there was no perfect play by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I don't think I can't recall really many mistakes that Shaggy made at all, but we definitely saw our fair share. I think everybody had a couple of things that they did that could have cost them the game before any coin flip did. But if you're playing from behind and you don't play perfectly, it's a lot harder. I don't think anybody's going to argue that it's harder to win when you're playing first and you're kind of forced to keep ahead lest your opponent, if you lose a point advantage and you're down on cards, it can be devastating. Only some decks or some draws can actually allow you the ability to get ahead in that situation, and like a second round or a third round situation. So, I mean, we're kind of talking around it, but yeah, 72%, it's pretty high. It's pretty high. You want that a little lower, like just a little lower for sure.
Yeah. I think that you make a great point in there where it's that the margin for error is so much smaller when you lose the coin flip. And it sort of reminds me a lot of the Cards Don't Matter video done by Lamios. And it's sort of like, you know, whether or not you go first doesn't matter, because it matters what you play and how you use that to your advantage. And it's just that they're so slim of an advantage maybe to going first. And so few situations do you ever want to go first that, like you say, like you can't really make a mistake. If you find out that you're going first, you have to play perfectly, especially at a high level. And that's what I'm trying to get at here with the Gwent Open being, you know, the seven top players on the ladder and a guy like Shaggy who just cut through everybody and made it up to, you know, Vaish and then eventually Jorah in the finals. You know, these are the top end players. And sure, they made a couple misplays. But the fact that misplays are so much more punished when losing the coin flip is probably a little bit problematic. And, you know, everybody's working hard to fix this. Like, this is a solution they've been working on for a long time. So we're eager to see what it might be.
For sure. And it's actually really interesting. Let's just talk about the tournament for a second real quick. I know that I would have loved to have seen, great job to Jorah, by the way. Great job to Jorah taking out Super JJ. But in a world where Super JJ actually went through, he had some decks, man. His decks were the coolest decks. I mean, we saw a lot of people bring very standard decks in this tournament. There are 8 players. They're all very good players. But, you know, the brand decks, like a couple of cards separated them between every player who brought brand. I think every player did bring brand. And brand was just really, it was just super tight and refined. But JJ's decks, he had a 39 card Northern Realms deck with Blood Curdling Roars in it. He had some pretty big decks that would handle mill strategies generally. And Shaggy was actually running a mill deck. He didn't get to play it in the finals. It actually was banned by Jorah, which was really something. Once again, we see Nilfgaard banned in the finals of a tournament. But if JJ got in and actually let that mill deck through and had 3 decks that could have potentially taken that deck out, I really wonder how that would have played out. Shaggy's an excellent player. He may have found a way around it a couple times, but it's really interesting that I feel like Super JJ was one of the only players that really branched out in bringing some unique stuff. It was cool to see Calvet. It was cool to see Mill. But the brand decks and some of the dwarf decks were really, really standard. And the Hensel decks were, there just weren't a lot. There wasn't a ton of variation in there. And I think that future tournaments, we probably want to see a little bit more from what you can bring that you can be confident that will win. I think you would agree with me on that.
Yeah, I actually thought that JJ's dwarf deck was really strong, and I thought that it also was also anti-mill. So he was working with a lot of the muster type cards like Barclay Else and Alzheimer's Double Cross and Marching Orders. I think were a couple of the cards in there. I don't remember specifically the entire list, but I know he used some of those cards, and he did run an anti-mill list from what I could tell. It was in the 30s for sure. That's incredibly brave, I think. And you're right that working out decks that work against every single deck and also except for one archetype, which was banned, and then being mill proof is really great because mill, I think McBeard is an archetype that you can't really play against. If they start to mill you and your deck is empty, what are you going to do? You know, if you can't 2-0 them, they're going to carry so many more cards on you. And it's just, I think that, some of the new cards that came out have really facilitated mill. And I think that JJ might be ahead of the curve on preventing that.
Yeah, the thing about mill is, by the way, if you're not really familiar with mill is it's a deck, I think Emir has been piloting it, and it involves playing Avalok multiple times. and causing your opponent to draw all of their decks. So when it comes down to future draws that could be granted by Tibor, Village of Forts, or just the draws at the end of the round, you're no longer drawing any cards because your opponent has tapped you out. Whereas the mill player does still have cards to draw. And the name comes from way, way back Magic the Gathering. A card called Millstone would actually force your opponent to draw cards. And it's been seen in a lot of card games. Basically, any deck that causes your opponent to draw out their deck to the detriment of, you know, in Hearthstone going into fatigue damage, in Gwent where every card is a turn. So if you get cards up on your opponent and it's as easy as just playing off a lock, eight points, draw two cards, it's kind of backbreaking, I would say. And, you know, in the new patch, Mill's gotten some new toys as well. But the thing about Mill in a tournament is that if you're expecting it, you can tech against it. And it's tough, right? It draws a ban if you think that it'll beat you. And I think we saw it right at the very, very beginning where I believe it was Duo Fennel was playing a Mill deck. Shaggy was playing a Mill deck as well. And he was playing against Chaincaller, and Chaincaller actually banned it. Or I think it was somebody banned Duo Fennel. One of the Mill decks was banned, but Chaincaller, I believe, was the one who banned it because I remember Chaincaller's list had absolutely no answer for it. So I think he just played it safe and banned Mill in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, Mill is this crazy archetype in Magic, I think. And it's you said Millstone, and I had to pull up the card art for this because it's so incredible. It has a quote on it that says, "Minds like mountains are never so grand and mighty that they can't be reduced to dust." And that's what Mill does to your deck, is it reduces it to dust. And there's this image on the Millstone card where it's like a head is carved out of a mountain. And on top of it is a grindstone attached to some sort of mechanical device that's grinding the head all the way down. And that's what it feels like to get milled. And that's an archetype you got to watch out for in the new patch. And it's quite a lot of things to watch out for in the new patch.
Before we get into talking about the new patch, we were actually visited by the Gwent Open champion, Shaggy. Join us for a chat with the champ. We talk about his lists that he brought, his experience with Gwent Open. Gray Boxer and I were fortunate enough to catch Shaggy before he went to work here. So have a listen, and we'll see you on the other side. Shaggy, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. We know you're short on time, but we're really excited to talk to you about the Gwent Open and your experiencing with the Gwent Open. But thanks for coming on. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's great to be here. I'm good, very good. A bit tired since I'm getting up early for work today.
Mm-hmm. Big congratulations on your champion or your victory here in the Gwent Open, and definitely going on as a wild card and not having an easy path there. Not to spoil anything, considering we've already talked about it on the episode, I just wanted to say, how did you, can you tell our listeners how you got into Gwent and what do you think of the game as it is right now?
Thanks, man. Yeah, sure. So I got into the game after playing The Witcher 3 with a friend of mine. He told me that they were actually releasing a standalone version of Gwent, so we both signed up for the closed beta and started playing then. And yeah, we have been playing the game ever since. And I think that the game is really fun at the moment. It's looking really promising, and I think that Life Coach said it really well when he said that Gwent was just going for quality, while a game like Hearthstone is going for quantity, and I think that it is doing a good job in achieving that.
Yeah, it was, and you had a chance to probably run into Life Coach while you were there at the Gwent Open, as he was also in attendance, front row, probably watching. We saw a couple of shots of that. But you are the wild card. You are the wild card competitor. You did go through a tournament on Thursday that was kind of behind closed doors. We didn't get a chance to really watch it. We just ended up kind of catching that the end of the. We got some details about your finals match with Vaish, but talk to us about that wild card tournament that happened on Thursday, the 24th. There, what was that like?
It was really tough qualifying through the wild cards. The final against Vaish was really a close best of five, which went 3-2 in my favor. I was really sweating in that match. Vaish had me basically down to my last card in every game. Which was really fun, But yeah, the wildcard qualifier itself was played in the CD Projekt Red Gwent booth at Gamescom. The final was played on the stage with commentary, but the other games were just in the booth in a secluded area, basically, and the matches were played out there.
Was it more distracting to play on stage than it was in the booth?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a completely different feeling playing on the stage than just sitting casually in front of a screen where like not a huge audience can see you.
And that's something we talk about on the show quite a lot, is that CD Projekt Red is trying to groom the competitive scene here for Gwent, and a lot of the top competitors in Gwent were top competitors in other card games or in other sorts of games. We saw Life Coach and PPD do quite well in the Gwent Challenger, and obviously Super JJ has been around and does quite well in the tournaments, you know, being a former Hearthstone competitor. So I wanted to ask you, was this one of your first tournament experiences, or was it one of your first live tournament experiences, or have you done other competitive games?
Well, I've never been really professional player, like getting paid for playing games or finishing big in tournaments or something like that. But I did play Magic the Gathering before and went to one or two GPs, so live tournaments in that. So it was not a completely new experience for me, but it was definitely the first one of its kind, like succeeding and being so focused in a tournament was definitely a first for me. I didn't expect to perform as well as I did.
Yeah, you performed well, all right. I think in the finals, you only lost one game, and I believe, was it only Vaish that took games away from you in the wild card?
No, in the wild card, I won my first match also 3-2, so I dropped four games in the wild card.
Okay.
And to be clear, you dropped only one game on day two of the Gwent Open. Only one game the entire day.
Yep.
That's how it went. I wanted to talk to you about your lineup. You were one of the two players in the finals to bring Emir, a mill deck as well, which ultimately was banned in the finals. What made you feel like the mill was going to be a competitive deck that would carry you to victory in your lineup?
Well, mill just punishes really efficient decks that try to thin and draw cards and see the whole deck in every game, basically, for consistency, which would be mainly SK discard and also many Northern Realms lists. And I felt like Emir mill was just an auto win in those matchups, basically. It was kind of weak against Dagon, which I planned to ban in almost every case anyways, so that's a good thing for bringing mill as well.
My follow-up question to this was, after you saw, I mean, I'm not really sure if you kind of studied or looked at the lists that other players had brought after the first game on, or the first round of games on Friday, once all the quarterfinals were complete, did you notice that Super JJ was running a lineup that was very counter-mill? And were you looking forward to that matchup? Did it come down to that?
I was so scared of Super JJ, for real. Like, I was obviously looked at the games on day one, so I knew what to expect in day two. And when I saw Super JJ's lineup that was designed to completely counter and shut down mill, I was really scared, because I knew that if I were to face him, I would have basically no chance at all to win with my Emir deck. I would just go 0-3 with it, and it wouldn't matter if I win with my other decks, because this one just can't win. So it's definitely a very scary strategy from him. It was a bit unfortunate that it didn't work out.
Yeah, and can you talk us through sort of the finals, I guess, because you didn't end up, you know, running into Super JJ at any point, and that would have been, I mean, an unstoppable force against an immovable object, I think, with those lists you guys had. But can you talk us through a little bit of the final, you know, set of four games, and how do you handled your nerves and everything playing for, you know, tons and tons of viewers and also, you know, trying to win Gwent Open?
I mean, the finals was the first or the most important decision I had to face was basically the ban, because both Dagon and Emir proved to be very potent against my setup. but I was more scared of the opponent's Emir in the end, because I thought I could win against his monsters, which I eventually did. And well, keeping calm on stage is quite different. Like, I got quite nervous on that day, and I did manage to keep it in check, but I don't know what tips I can give for that. I just kind of managed to handle it.
And that last, the final play when you played, I played Elven Mercenary to Elven Mercenary into Thunderbolt Potion to win by 2 points there. You were probably ready to go into game five, but when you saw that Thunderbolt Potion and you realized that you had punched your ticket into, you were going to the Challenger anyway, regardless, but, you know, getting up there, getting that handshake from Maul Cosplay and having it all be over, at that point, kind of like, what did that feel like to just realize that it was all over? And you were the champ. You were the latest reigning champ.
It was an incredible feeling. Like, it took some time to arrive. Like, I didn't even fully realize what just happened for the first 5 or 10 minutes. But once it set in, it was just probably the best day of my life so far.
I mean, that's awesome. That's exactly what we want to hear. And it looked that way. And, you know, we are just super huge fans of you. All of a sudden with this huge dominating performance. And I like to say that way back from the beginning, you know, when they said that we were going to have a wild card entry, I said, they're keeping a promise, right? They're saying that you are the wild card and they're bringing someone in to compete with these top guys on the ladder. And, you know, they're going to give a random person really the chance to join the pro circuit essentially of Gwent. And, they kept that promise and it's, I mean, like you said, it's kind of feel pretty good to be there.
You've been playing since the close beta. You have been playing since the day one, right? Because I remember seeing your name around. I've seen your name around for a while, but not in like any, not in many of the open tournaments. Have you been playing in any of the other tournaments? Any of the other tournaments that have been organized by the community, or is this like your first big tournament? Because you've always been near the top of the ladder in my recollection.
Well, yeah, not exactly day one, because the CDPR invitation email actually landed in my spam, so it took some time to find. But yeah, I've been playing Gwent since pretty much the very start, yeah. And in terms of tournaments, I haven't had that much time, or I didn't have that much time in the past because of studies and work, but I've been getting more into the tournament scene recently, like the past few months. I've been playing in the Gwentleman tournaments, and yeah, I'm only gonna be playing in more in the future.
Yeah, because you, one of the invitations that didn't get lost in the spam email is your invitation to the Gwent Challenger.
And, oh, yeah, definitely.
You and Jorah both got invited to that. You're going to be competing along with Life Coach, and that's going to be a big stage up there. And with this new patch just launching and the pro ladder hopefully just a few days away, what do you think about the future of this whole scene?
Well, I'm definitely very excited for it, and I think CDPR is, and the community of course as well, is really pushing it, and I really think I am going to see it, or I really hope I will see it succeed, and I think I will.
Do you have a favorite deck that you've been pushing with since the new patch so far?
Well, not exactly favorite, no. I've just been brewing with some different factions and looking at what looks strong, because I'm just focused on the pro ladder at the moment, and I do want to have potent, and of course future tournaments, and I do want to have good decks from different factions prepared for those.
Right on.
One of the things we talked about on this episode is the slight delay on the release of the pro ladder and what that might have been caused by. We got the blurb from CD Projekt Red saying that, you know, we're listening to community feedback and we want to make sure that everything is perfect for the launch of the pro ladder. What do you think that might be? Is there anything that's sticking out to you that might be the cause of a delay in the pro ladder, whether it's you know, a balance of a certain type of card or archetype, or what are you seeing?
Well, I do think that the balance aspect makes a difference in that choice, because, well, I'm not an expert per se, but I would say that Skytel is pretty much the strongest faction at the moment, with a few different deck archetypes that all are a bit above the curve of the other factions. so I expect those to get tuned down a bit. And in terms of other reasons, I hadn't really thought about that, actually, so I'm not sure.
Well, Shaggy, we really appreciate you coming by and talking to us about your Gwent Open experience, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot of you in the future. In fact, we know we're going to see you, at least in the Challenger, at the very least. And I hope you have hope you enjoy the rest of your time with the patch and preparing for Challenger and getting up there in the pro ladder. And if you wanted to plug your channel, I know you just started, you just got an account made on Twitch, you just got an account made on Twitter. Where can people find you if they want to see you play Gwent these days?
Thank you, McBeard, man. It was really fun being here. People can find me on Twitter/ShaggyGwent for now. The streaming thing is going to take a delay since I will be moving soon and my internet is not good enough to stream at the moment. I just wanted to give shoutouts to you because of the great casting. I watched the Twitch streams, of course, of the tournament.
Thanks.
And yeah, it was fun being here, guys.
Yeah, and just shortly before you go, Shaggy, we are an audio-only podcast, and we, you know, like to ask our guests, you know, since we're recording in the Commander's Horn Studios, could you potentially describe the Commander's Horn Studios for our audio listeners?
Well, it's probably like a wooden tavern with like a shoe plushie and some mugs. That's what I'm imagining.
That's nice. It's nice. We're recording in the knockoff version of the CD Projekt Red Studios. I like that, Shaggy. Thank you very much.
All right, Shaggy, we'll let you go. Thanks again, man.
Thank you, guys.
Big stuff to talk about, the new patch. Let's get into that now. I think we've talked a lot about the Gwent Open. Just to close that off, though, thanks everybody for watching the Gwent Open. Thanks for your feedback. There was a feedback thread on Reddit that was actually started by Rafal Yaki, who was the who was producing, and we got a lot of time to hang out with him in Poland. And the feedback has been very good, and trust me, they are definitely listening because we want all the events to be very entertaining and just as good as they possibly can be. So thanks very much for the feedback, everybody, especially on the casting. We love it. I think generally everything was very well received, and you know, we're always going to be improving in that regard. But the patch, okay, let's talk about the patch, because it wasn't too much long after, I think it was Tuesday, so the Gwent Open, the competitors had just cooled down. I had just left Poland. And I was spending some time in Cologne, Germany. By the way, quick story, though. Because I was heading to Cologne after the Gwent Open, and, the CD Projekt Red staff was coming back from Cologne, when I was waiting at the gate for the plane to come and pick me up and take me to Cologne, it just so happened that was the plane that Paul Berger and MPG and MJ and Bannon, they were all on that plane, so they got off the plane. And I'm like hiding behind a wall talking to my wife on the phone. And I feel these two hands on my back. I'm like, who could this possibly be? I'm in the Warsaw Airport in Poland. I don't know anybody. What's happening? And it was Powell, and it was the most hype geek out moment. So just shout out to Powell Berger and to the crew. There's a picture of, I posted a picture of it on Twitter. I'll put a link in the show notes. But it was like one of the craziest moments, just blowing my mind that I just happened to be there when they were there.
Yeah.
So they came back. They were tired. Berger goes on stream the very next day for the developer stream. The guy had maybe just like a couple hours to sleep before getting back into work on Monday. He deserves your respect. So
yeah.
Shout out to Powell.
The guys work really hard on the team, and sometimes we seem very positive, and we're very positive about the team, and because we've met these guys and we know how hard they're working. So that's really funny you ran into them. I think they're warming the seats for you, huh, McBeard?
Yeah. MPG said they were just checking the plane, and it's totally normal that they were there before I was. It was 9 p.m. by the way, guys. Like they got home, they got in pretty late on the Sunday. So
wow.
And then the patch drops. So the dev stream was on Monday. What a stream this dev stream was. This stream had a 2.5-minute slow mode by the end of it because the chat was so lit up, and it still didn't even seem like it was in slow mode at all. It was like one of the craziest Twitch chats I've ever seen. The changes were pretty, they went through them pretty thoroughly, and they said the patch was coming in the coming days, and then Tuesday, boom, there it is. So we'll talk about this patch. I mean, there are some big banner changes. We like to call them, you know, marquee changes. I think the big one is gold cards no longer immune to weather effects, damaging effects, scorch effects, almost everything save for like decoy and resurrection. Gold cards are just not immune anymore. It's one of the biggest, it's a huge thing that's been in Gwent for a very long time. And it's gone now. And what do you think? I mean, we heard it was leaked by, I believe, a Polish streamer on Reddit that said that there was a fundamental core change that has existed since the beginning of Gwent, since Wild Hunt, Witcher 3. And a lot of people thought it could be a lot of things, you know, the way the coin works, weather, the way weather works, the way rose work. But gold bodies can now be damaged, destroyed. It's pretty wild. I mean, it really changes kind of what a control deck can do. I think it changes kind of like interactivity. You can't get blockaded in round three and be stuck with really, really bad draws. What do you think about this, Gray Boxer? What do you think about this change?
Well, I think it increases interactivity by a mile. And I think that's a huge piece of feedback that CD Projekt Red has taken to heart. And in so doing, this is a necessary change. I mean, we don't have to like it. And I am like the classic Witcher 3 Gwent aficionado. I mean, I've got my Gwent glasses on and my silly frilly shirts and everything. And I'll be honest with you, I don't like it. I am much of a purist like that. I kind of want to say, hands off our Gwent! But listen, McBeard, we love Gwent, and we love Gwent as a competitive game, so we got to take our medicine here. I think that gold immunity and the lack of interaction got to be a plague in Gwent, and if you didn't have the necessary answers to gold, such as like a shackle, which was 0 points, you couldn't prevent their value. Scorchatel decks with Bork, Dash, Ethna, and Saskia, round three could beat basically anything that wasn't perfectly staggered. I mean, the mirror in those kind of matches was always a snooze fest anyway, so I have to say, I think in the long run, this is a huge benefit to anyone who wants Gwent to succeed as a competitive game, and I do.
You do, yeah. I mean, me too, obviously. Like, I played a bunch of games today. I finally got a chance to get my stream turned on, and we played some stuff, and I played a little bit while I was on vacation when I had the time. And for the most part, I didn't really notice a lot of instances where I felt like, oh man, this change has changed. Like, it's changed for the worse. I don't like this. Like, it just didn't really come up with me. And when I first kind of heard about it and I was thinking about it, did I think about it a lot. It made me really uncomfortable at first because it was such a huge change. And I thought about what the backlash was going to be and like how it was going to be defended. But I think it was taken more or less like pretty well. Like, I think that there is some other stuff, like some of the new bronze cards and some of the new archetypes, I think are causing a lot more uproar, like are causing a lot more like really charged opinions. And the gold change seems to like taking a backseat to some of the things that people really are taking issue with in this patch. So, and the other thing, when I was thinking about it, I thought, okay, let's say I wanted to fight for this change to be reverted. Let's say I didn't want golds to be vulnerable anymore. What am I really fighting for? Like, what is it about golds being immune that is so great that I feel like it needs to be in the game? And outside of nostalgia or legacy, or the fact that I kind of like the Scoia'tael deck that ran Scorches and had a lot of gold strength at the end. I did like that deck, but I didn't like it because, you know, I liked it because it made me feel powerful when everything went right. And when you draw your cards right, you just kind of end up with these perfect endings. And I think that you still can do that because the power level of bronzes have gone up. The power level of golds have stayed at more of like really strong power play and utility sort of like, but the real workhorses are now bronze cards and there's a whole lot more of them now. And, you know, silver cards are still, you know, they're big turning point cards, but I think that the cards generally are all closer together. Like a turn feels still like a turn now between gold and bronze. Generally, I think I wanted to see how it would be received. I wanted to know how it feels. And I think that generally it's okay, right? I feel like I haven't had any games that I've been like really sour on because of the gold change. Do you have a different point of view on that?
Well, no, I'm saying that I think that I don't like it as a Gwent purist, basically, you know, and that's that's an untenable position. So I'm taking my medicine, as I said, and I think it's good for the game. And I think that it's, it makes golds more tactical, right? Because they're not immune anymore. So they're not something you just slam down round three and win. You know, you can't just gobble up all the highest units with Unseen Elder anymore and still, you know, avoid a Scorch, you know? And that used to be a game of chicken, right? Like, who's going to Scorch the giant Vran before the Unseen Elder came down or something like that? And that doesn't happen anymore because they're destroyable now. So I think that those kind of plays were, the only way to stop a gold card was to prevent its value before it occurred. That doesn't have to happen anymore. You can deal with gold cards now with regular control effects. And I think that some of the golds have had boosted power as a result of this. And it's nice to not have to carry a bunch of shackles in your deck, which is something I've always wanted. So I think it's a great change. And the fact that I don't have to run shackles right now because I can Elzer's Thunder a gold that I don't like is really great.
I think some of the golds have a really good direction of having armor attached to them because they're like really maybe they're really important cards that need to stay on the board for them to have any value at all, like Wild Boar of the Sea. I believe Ciri has armor now, so she's like harder to remove. You can still remove her, but she's harder to remove. And Villain Tretmirth, or Bork as we've been calling him, but Villain Tretmirth, a card that counts down and then scorches the highest unit on the board. A can't Scorch himself and also has armor. Correct me if I'm wrong. Actually, I'm just going to double check. But Villain Tretmirth also has armor, I believe. Yeah, three armor. It's only three armor, yep. But it's still armor. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I think that I'm sure that we'll see as some tweaks come here and there. Like, there are things that are kind of like, Geralt is a 13 strength gold card. Okay. Monsters has Imperial Manticore now, which is a 12 point gold silver card, and the difference between those two cards is 1 point. In fact, you could say the Imperial Manticore is better than Geralt because you can play, you know, Catacan or use Draug or use those are the two ones. Those are the two I think that really are the most the things you can really do. And it's like Geralt really feels like just an underclassed card right now. But I think that we're going to see little tweaks and changes kind of as, the big, big amount of games have, like, the data rolls in from these games. Like, some cards got, like, Yennefer and Triss Butterfly Spell got Death Wish, so they get a little bit of extra value if they're ever removed. And they're also kind of a higher base strength as well. But I think generally, like, I think some cards just need a little bit of love right now, but it still feels like you can pick a wide variety of gold cards to round your deck out right now.
Yeah, and I think that tweaking the gold values matters a lot more, and tweaking their armor matters a lot more now that they're not immune to everything. So there's a lot more balancing they can do. And remember, we talked about how much we liked the fact that leaders jump out onto the board and they're a value now that they can attach to their effect. So that's something that they can balance better and maybe be even more creative. So I think that the gold change is specifically good for that reason, because it's easier to balance cards around their power and armor if they're destroyable. And do you want this card to be able to be killed by a Thunder? Like, for example, you said Ciri. She's 5 strength but has 3 armor, so you can't Elzer's Thunder her to death, but you can kill her with Assassination. Needs a gold card, you know? But, that's something that I think we needed. And, it'll be all right. And speaking of Geralt, by the way, I don't think he's that bad. I saw someone Leo Bonhart, one of my giant Vrans today, with Geralt, so that was nice. Good for him.
Yeah. Reveal's kind of Reveal really surprised me today. I played against a Reveal deck that, you know, once they get a big unit revealed, like a Nilfgaardian Knight or Geralt or something like that, first of all, Leo Bonhart, if you need 13 damage to do something, that'll help you for sure. But the spotter is now working when they just can trigger off any revealed card and then gain that strength and get boosted. The spotters are really, really strong. They're as strong as they were in round 3 previously in a previous patch, but you can get them to that level in any round now. It seems like that's okay, I guess, but it's reveal is demands your respect, I think, right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of archetypes out there that maybe didn't demand as much respect as they did in the last patch, and they're out there right now succeeding. And I think that we can probably talk about at least a few of those today, McBeard, without going into a full-on strategy section. There are some really powerful decks that have gone out there, and a couple of them are sort of problematic, like this Mulligan stuff going on. What's up with that deck, McBeard?
You know, I played a bunch of games. I'm only at rank 14. I haven't really had a lot of time to put into it. I'm rank 14 at this point, and I've run into some Francesca, and I haven't really felt the burn. Like I know at the top of the ladder, Squirtle's out there and is pretty crazy, and I know that a lot of people are, you know, they've got a lot of issues with the amount of tempo that Mulligan can. We say Mulligan, but it's not really Mulligan. It's Francesca. Francesca's got a new kind of, she's got a new style now.
She got a groove back.
She got a groove back. Francesca, actually super interesting. Back in the day, King Bran used to be able to draw any card out of your deck at the cost of discarding two cards from your hand. So you'd go down in cards to actually get that card because it was such a powerful effect. And at the time, that was not untrue. It was a very powerful effect. You really couldn't just give Bran the ability to just take whatever card you wanted out of your deck. But Francesca can do that now. It's just, it's really interesting kind of how the game has evolved and kind of how power is perceived and what powerful effects we're okay with. And, you know, if you've got cards like Zarathustius that can look at your opponent's entire deck, ask me my opinions about that later. I don't like that card at all, but I think that it's really interesting how strong these cards have gotten these days. And Mulligan does have a lot of them, and you can get some combos that are devastating, and it's hard to pass on them. It's hard to get ahead of them, and a lot of people are. I find it hard for me to discuss this without discussing the upcoming hotfix, because I know a lot of people are hoping that there are some cards and some archetypes that are going to get some attention in the upcoming in this hotfix that may or may not arrive before the pro ladder. We'll talk about the pro ladder in just a second, but I just want to say that don't expect there to be a ton to change. Don't expect a ton to change. There might be a few tweaks here and there. Mulligan might be something that gets hit. Maybe Summoning Circle gets hit, but we'll see. I know that Mulligan and Ethna are the ones that people are looking at and are hoping have a little bit of power reduction. I haven't, like I said, though, I've been playing Northern Realms. I think I've been playing a fairly strong Northern Realms deck right now with Radovid that can deal with this deck. And I played Monsters all day today on stream, and we lost a couple games to Squirtle, but it didn't seem like a blowout. It didn't seem like I couldn't just pass at the right time. But I know when you're up there at the top of the ladder, it's really, really strong and it's really crazy. What do you think, man? How has your experience been so far laddering?
It's been fine. I think that I haven't run into any crazy Francesca decks, and they're able to put out a ton of power and they're able to do a ton of burst, but so is consume, which is what I've been laddering with. So I haven't really run into Francescas that have given me a huge bit of a hard time. Just kicked my mic. So Mulligan hasn't been giving me a hard time, neither has Francesca. You know, good value out of the bronzes is what that deck is built around. It doesn't have a lot of carryover. The decks that are really problematic right now are the carryover decks with Spell Tael, Skoya Spell, Stammel Tael, whatever it is out there with spamming Stammelfords. I think that's a problem, McBeard. I think that Marigold's Hailstorm is a problem. Because it's Coral, even though Coral's been changed to no longer do what she used to do, it has the entire row ignoring armor rounding up, and it isn't positionally based, it's just an entire row, and you can Ethna that to play it again. So I think that the Mulligan archetype is really powerful. I think that it's top of the ladder, it is much more advantageous than it is sort of in the middle of the ladder where we're making more mistakes, right? So I think that really for me, the trouble in the middle of the ladder is the spell decks out there, because there's so much that they can do to destroy you, and they really don't have much of a downside with those protectors getting buffed up the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, Marigold's right. It's interesting. I think everybody, you saw it in the Gwent Open. You've seen it for a while. Coral was bonkers strong, super, super strong. One of the strongest cards in the game, if not the strongest card in the game. I think that anybody could argue that if they wanted to. And Marigold is a zero power Coral that any deck can use. I struggle with this a little bit because I know Coral was very strong, and I know that Marigold Hailstorm, by virtue of it having the same effect, should be very strong as well. So when they changed Coral and they left Marigold's Hailstorm, they must have been okay with the effect being in the game. I struggle with it because it's like Marigold's Hailstorm, nobody played it before. Like, it really wasn't seen all that often. I'm not going to say nobody, and people played it. I think there were some Ethnodex that played it. Skellige didn't need to play it. Skellige was one of the most popular decks. Brand Discard didn't really need to play it because it had Coral. And Dagon didn't play it, really. And Dagon was like probably the second most popular deck, and Henselt didn't play it either. But now you're seeing it here and there, and you're seeing people like tech it in. And it's like, why did it get so much more popular now? It's always been available to everybody, Marigolds, and it's always been rounding up, at least since the last patch, as Coral was doing. So it's weird for me to say that it's a problem because it's like, it's not new. It's been there. So I don't know. I think that it's, I don't know if it needs to change or not. I'm not going to argue that it's not powerful because it is very powerful. And it's punishing as the power level of a lot of cards have gone up. Marigold's in turn has gone up in strength and value as well, because it's always going to be based on maximum strength. So, and gold cards are now targetable now, so you can just, you hit more things with Marigold. So like, I get it. I get the argument, but if we're looking at all the things that need to change, is Marigold, if I had to change like five cards right now, is Marigold's one of those cards? I don't know if it is. I think one of the things I don't like, I'm not crazy about Stamelford's. I'm not crazy about Earth Elemental having a shield in the first place, carry over, whatever, but the fact that those things are so hard to get rid of, and the fact that you can just generate so many of them, ugh, I hate it. I don't like it. I don't know if I've... I honestly, and it's not even because like I've had a crazy experience with like, you know, super, like a ton of carryover or too many Earth Elementals. It's just, I really do feel like it's a principle of the thing with me with that one. I just feel like of all the cards to give you to qualify for Stamelford's... a thing that needs to occur, which is very easy for Squirtle, since the Elven Mercenary is one strength, so Stamelfords will kill it, spawn the Earth Elemental as it does. Stamelford's Tremors, since we're talking about this card very, very specifically, it does one damage to all units on the board, and if it kills anything, yours or the enemy's, you get an Earth Elemental on the melee row, which is the same Earth Elemental that monsters have. Six strength of the shield spawns carryover of two small golems. And it feels unnecessary for it to be that card specifically, I guess.
But it's only one Earth Elemental, right? If you kill six one. Units, you get one.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't get
only
six
one at a time.
Yeah, you don't get six Earth Elementals for killing six units at one.
Yeah. So not until you played Ithlien for two Stamelfords and then Sage for three follow-up Stamelfords and then Mercenary.
Brings me to my next point, which is that Stamelfords in its current iteration is kind of like, it makes your Sages or your Elven Mercenary sort of like an Ithlien, because you're playing a randomly tutored, I guess, you can't even really call it a tutor, a randomly summoned... spell from your deck, and if it's Stamelfords, you get the bronze effect of the Stamelfords card. You get to damage all of the opposing units by one. Sure, you damage yourself by one, but you don't run very many units as a Skoya spell anyway. So what you get if you kill something, though, is another bronze card. So it's like every time you play Stamelfords, you're getting two bronze cards of value, and it's it tends to snowball, and that's something that, it's the top deck on Gwent DB, at least for the past week. It's got 100,000 views on Gwent DB, so this is a really powerful deck, and I think that's the effect that is really, really making the Stamelfords work so well, is the fact that you really get two bronzes with one card.
I think Sage is a tough one to swallow for me. I think Sage is a three strength, one of the new Squirtle cards. Three strength unit, resurrect a special card. Pretty simple, right? You just get to play a card in the graveyard that's special card, any special card that's in the graveyard. And Is it any special card? I'm just going to double check to make sure that that is 100% correct what I'm saying. Resurrect a Bronze Alchemy or spell card. Okay, so Stamelford does qualify for that, as does Alzer's Thunder. I mean, with Alzer's Thunder, Sage is essentially a Bronze Death Mold, which is pretty wild. And then the fact that it can play Stamelford's, and you play Stamelford's with an Elven Mercenary, you can play it three more times with a Sage and still have two Stamelfords left in your deck if you really want to. You know, it's, I think Scoia'tael is in a position to abuse special cards, really. Like, that's, you know, that's not new for Scoia'tael, so it's not like crazy to think that they would be able to do that. And I think it's okay that they're able to do that generally, like as a concept of the faction, being able to interact with special cards in more powerful ways while having, you know, maybe some weaker units that do that. But Sage is really strong, and Stamelford's Tremors is a card that's just begging to be abused, because you can carry over a lot of stuff. You generate units that are difficult to deal with, that can help you in further rounds. So Sage is just really, really strong. Stamelford's Tremors is really strong right now as well. Another card I want to talk about being really strong that I actually, this one I have, I do not like. This one I'm looking forward to seeing change. It's the new version of Summoning Circle. Perhaps you have had your own experiences with it, Gray Boxer, but if you haven't, if you're not aware of the new version of Summoning Circle, it reads, just getting it ready here.
Yeah, I got you. Spawn a base copy of the last bronze or silver unit or silver units any player placed on the board. Leaders cannot be copied. I mean, it's a copy of any silver, honestly, and that's insane.
But it always did that. But what it was, I don't think it did was spies, and it definitely didn't do your own units, right? It was your opponent's units. Those were the big changes.
Yeah, so you can basically double down on spies, triple down on spies if you have Ethne.
Yeah, that too. Here's an infuriating thing that happened to me. And again, because Summoning Circle is now just more prevalent now, there's a lot of interactions that I just didn't realize before, but I don't know if Summoning Circle carried over. But because you could play your own unit again, my opponent plays Cheruvial. I pass because I think I don't want to deal with Truvial. I can't get ahead of Truvial. My opponent's just going to pass on me anyway. I'm going to pass. Truvial's going to trigger. We're going to go into the next round. Next round, round two, first turn, Summoning Circle, new Truvial. I lost it. I was so pissed. I didn't want to play against Truvial again, but because Summoning Circle, it works on your own units as well, no problem. So that's, I don't know. I think the big one is spies. I think that most people are having issues with spies. I think round to round, it working on your own card is, I'm worried about that a little bit, but I think that might just be creative game mechanics. Jury's out on that one for me.
The ability of Summoning Circle is to have the flexibility to use somebody else's card, right? And it's not to be able to reuse your own card, and certainly not able to reuse your own spy card. So it's being abused. It's being recycled and abused by Scoia'tael cheaters and... I'm just kidding, Powell Berger.
Well, in any case, some people don't like it. One of those people being me.
Yeah.
But I think the card that I want changed the most isn't even a card that anybody seems to care about, and that's Zarathisius.
Yeah.
Card that lets you look at your opponent's deck. How does no one have a problem with this card? How does no one have a problem with this card fundamentally in a card game? It's a card that allows you to look at your opponent's deck. I don't want that in the game. I really don't. I think that not only do you look at your opponent's deck, you can ascertain what's in your opponent's hand, especially when the meta starts to like really refine itself and develop. And I know that if I'm playing against somebody who's much better than me, which happens, you know, when you get up there and you hit your kind of your wall, you know, if you have people that are playing that card, it's just they can put you on anything at all. And you can't really surprise them with anything in your deck. They see what's coming. They even get the draw order. It doesn't even shuffle the deck. I'm struggling to understand why no one is really talking about this card. Maybe I'm not seeing it, but I wish that card functioned differently. I think that being able to look at your opponent's deck is not great.
Yeah, and I mean, there's an argument on the other hand that says, well, you know, reveal shouldn't exist maybe because you shouldn't be able to look at your opponent's hand. And I think that Zarthisius sort of carries that a bit further. And in your opinion, it carries it too far. I think that if this card is as powerful as we think it is, it will start to show itself after the next balance patch. However small we think the patch might be, it's probably going to change a couple of the very top tier decks. And if Zarthisius is appearing in one of the top tier Nilfgaard decks, because Nilfgaard spies right now are really strong, reveal's good too. But if you can fit Zarthisius in there and make him work for you, then maybe this will be something we'll be talking about very seriously a few weeks from now.
But yeah, so I mean, these are some of the cards that, you know, and of course there's, you know, there's the some of the big, big bad bronze cards out there that Squirtle have been using, Vread Officers, Vread Vanguards, and such. But, you know, outside of that world of Squirtle, there's been some pretty cool archetypes out there as well. Northern Realms has some cool stuff that you can do. I think that most people are kind of gravitating towards a general build that involves armor, Dunbanner Heavy Cavalry, and some of the really good snowball units. I personally like to run Northern Realms with no Dunbanner Heavy Cavalry in my list yet. I may add them, but I just like generally like the snowball units, the Temerian Drummers, the Knight Elects, and the Trebuchets. Like those cards are great cards, and when you get a lot of them on the board, it's really something. Of course, we talked about Mill as well, and I played that Life Coach 40 card consume today on stream. What decks have you been playing, Gray Boxer?
Well, I played some Squirtle Scorch Control just to see how it would go now that everybody's golds are scorchable, and I figured I'd see a bit more consume than I did, and maybe just see a few more big gold cards, and I'd get some good scorches. So I played a bit of Squirtle consume. Squirtle Control. I've also played a lot of Consume, and I haven't played the Life Coach 40 card deck, but I've played a deck that's well above 25 cards. I've played decks, basically, I've had three different versions of the deck, and they've been 28, 30, and 33 cards, and it's been going well. I absolutely love Consume this patch. I think that Consume has been one of the best archetypes for the longest time in Gwent, and it's been really fun. You know, there's a couple of new cards that are really good. I think I really like Harpy in the deck. It's just really hard to mulligan around them. You get a couple beasts in there since you're always playing Sileno Harpies in Consume. Mm-hmm. So you can get a lot of beasts going. But generally, you know, it's just really enjoying the way that the cards have been rebalanced. I love the new Kairin, for example. You can finally DG Thunderer rejoice. You can consume an opposing unit as long as it's 6 strength or lower. And this is something he talked about ages ago on one of our Commander's Horn emails. So the consuming a unit is what Kairin does now. And that's at least 16 points plus the consume synergy. And I think that you've been enjoying Succubus, McBeard, because I know I have.
Yeah, Succubus is a really strong card. You know, I thought it wasn't going to be very good. 4 strength is really low, but when you play it late in the game, unless your opponent has an answer for it, it's going to net you a pretty massive swing. And I think that if Succubus kind of maintains popularity with monsters, and monsters, you know, I think they might be struggling a little bit, but I think that Succubus is such a bomb round 3 card. I've really been enjoying it as well. There's a lot of different archetypes you can play right now. I think Skellige is missing some stuff right now. I think Skellige might need a little bit of help. I haven't seen a lot of Skellige on the ladder. Here and there, I've seen some decks here and there. We know there's Warcry Self-Wounding. There's looks like there's a Herald deck. I mean, it just seems like do a bunch of damage and stuff and make your axemen work. And, of course, discard. Discard's still good. I think you just replace pirates with warmongers and you go to town. Have you been playing any Skellige or seen any Skellige out there?
Yeah, the Skellige I've seen has been discard usually. Not a lot of heralds around. I've seen some Croc with the boats, so the boats decks. I have just taken my time with this. I've played some Queensguard too, so and I've played against some Queensguard, so I've experienced a number of different Skellige archetypes in the new patch. And you know, discard is kind of funny right now because it still has the problems it always had. It has a lack of upside, a lack of high power swings, and You know, there's a couple of cards that used to do a really good job keeping that kind of power down. You know, like Coral, for example, who's changed, and you could do some pretty you know, big swings with your pirate captains. With the bronzes sort of being rounded out with these Clan Drummond Warmongers now, you don't really fit your, you don't have a lot of spots for your captains, which is odd. And the pirates have been buffed to 9 strength, so they're almost an auto include. They're a two discard plus the 9 strength body. I think that the one thing that's holding back discard McBeard is that these Clan Drummond Warmongers are a 7 strength card, and 7 strength bronzes are not good anymore. That's sort of been the case, is bronzes now are coming down as 10s, 12s, 14s, and while it's, you could argue that, you know, last patch the best bronzes were high upside 8 strength or higher, I think that Clan Drummond Warmongers, you know, it's almost like they're giving them the power that they would have if they discard a raider, which is what, like 11 in round one. And I think that this is a problem. It's thinning for thinning's sake and a little bit of synergy, and it lacks upside. I think that the other decks are doing better with with thinning and with building bronze strength. So I think that they're being held back by that. And the other archetype, McBeard, is the boats and greatsword deck. Have you played against that yet?
Yeah, just real quick about the Clan Drummond Warmonger. When that card was shown to us, that card seemed so good. So good. And it probably is still very good, but you make a good point that, you know, you do have to cut stuff for it. Are you cutting warships? Are you cutting pirates? I mean, pirates are buffed, warships are the same. But I think it's like, I like the card, but it gets most of its strength and swing from actually using with the raider. You can set up some plays, I guess, if you need to get something in the graveyard. You're not playing Bran. It allows, you know, some ways to get some cards into the graveyard without playing Bran at all. You can set up your Queen's Guards in this way as well. But it is, yeah, it is, you know, when you look at how strong bronzes can get, it does seem a little on the low side. But he's more of a setup card that has some flexibility. I think he seemed like he was going to be one of the strongest cards Skellige was going to get. I know, I'm not so sure. It's interesting, just on paper, just kind of how it worked out. With self-wounding, or maybe like, yeah, with boats and greatsword, I like it. I was actually talking to Merchant about this today. It's really susceptible to movement. So you move your greatsword away from the boat, or you move the boat away from the greatsword, and you got nothing, right?
Game's over, yeah.
So I think... Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of movement out there right now. I think Drowners are really popular. Drowners are really strong for monsters right now. You know, Zoltan and the Vried Brigade, I believe it is. They're happy to move you around as well. And, you know, it's you have matchups where you're probably not going to get moved, but you're going to have probably a fair amount where you are going to get moved. And if you base your entire kind of strategy out of setting up your Clan and Crate Greatsword to get nailed, and you can just kind of get that intercepted, it's got to be a little tougher, I think. But I think where Greatsword would excel, I think, I haven't seen the deck list out there personally, I believe I'd probably want to build Greatsword with something like the Brockfar Archers or something like that, that kind of always worked with the Young Berserkers in the older school Axeman decks, where you were happy to just damage anything possible. And maybe it's something where you need to do a bit more manual damaging of the greatsword if they were to get moved. There's got to be a backup plan, I think, for a deck like that. I think that Skellige is still being refined right now. And I think that there's some power that will still be unlocked. I don't think it needs any help from the hotfix. I think maybe it's the surging power of other decks that make it look weak in comparison. But I'm going to give Skellige a good look soon, once I'm done having my fun with Northern Realms and Monsters, I think.
Yeah, and I think that you make a good point that it's just, there's other decks out there to play, and Skellige has just sort of been left behind a little bit. Like we said, that was a very powerful card. The Warmonger was going to be huge on the old patch. On the new patch, when bronzes are all 12 plus, a 7 strength card isn't that great. Even if it's 11, it's not that great. It's a little bit of thinning. That's fine. I'm just saying that it's not high enough upside for the, you know, because I mean, there's never a problem getting through your entire deck as discard. There never has been. So there's, you know, there's almost a lack of utility for these cards and a lack of upside for their power. The fact that they're a seven and they discard something, you know, why is the pirate a nine and discards two cards, whereas this guy will discard one, even though you get to target it. It's really hard, McBeard, to figure out how to balance this guy. I mean, I could say give him a couple of points and it might help, but you might be right. We might just see a resurgence of discard after some balances come out.
Well, he is a veteran, is he not?
Yeah.
He is a veteran, so he is 9 points in round three. So I think he's okay. I think he's actually good. I think the things that seem underpowered right now are actually fine cards right now. It's just that there's a lot of cards out there that are really, really strong. But I think that Drummond Warmonger is, I think that the thought originally, at least from me, was that that card was going to be overpowered, but I think that it's where it needs to be. I think that they did a good job designing this card, honestly, and I think it's at a good spot. And it's possible that discard Skellige ends up strong once again. Just give it some time. Skellige will find a way. They've had their time being super strong in some patches. Right now, they are just, I think that they're more underrepresented than they are underpowered by any stretch of the imagination. It's hard, though, because Squirtle's super popular, Northern Realm's super popular. For good reason, they're very strong decks, but I think Skellige is fine. I think discard Skellige has, you know, a lot of potential. It's just no one's really playing it right now. That's how it feels to me.
Yeah, I've only ran into one in over 20 games today.
Yeah, and then I guess the last archetype we haven't really talked too much about is Nilfgaard. Nilfgaard reveal. We did talk about reveal, I think, a little bit. Reveal is pretty strong with the new spotters. Nilfgaard Spies is also really strong, and there's a couple of ways you can play it. If you want to play Nausicaa Brigades, perhaps, or if you want to play the new Imperial Enforcers that do damage whenever you play a spy. Nausicaa Brigades were buffed to do 7 damage to a disloyal target. The Infiltrators are really, really strong cards. New card for Nilfgaard, 9 strength cards that toggle the disloyal effect on your opponent's cards, which I love the flavor of. Like, as the player who's having Infiltrator make, like, cards go from loyal to disloyal, like nothing changes, they don't switch sides, but they just get that spy marker, that red eye above it, and as the controller of those cards, it's like, I can't trust any of these guys, they're all against me. It makes you paranoid because there's cards like Menno that can kill them, or Treason that can pull them away. I love the Infiltrator as a card. I think Spy Nilfgaard is really fun.
Is Spy running Treason right now?
I haven't seen it, but you could make a case that it's, you know, even though it's got a cap of 10 strength on what it now it pulls, it used to do what it does what it used to do. It pulls a card from one side of the board to the other, but it's got a cap, it can't be more than 10 strength, but that's still pretty good. Like, it tops out at 20 strength swing, and you can kind of tailor that a little bit with the Imperial Enforcers being able to kind of do little bits of damage here and there, and then ultimately you can treason something that you've turned disloyal with Infiltrators, who have, you know, I just love the flavor on Infiltrators.
Yeah, they're really cool, and they're one of those cards that you start thinking, oh my god, does he have Menno?
Yeah.
Because if Menno comes down, Menno is like an 8 strength Igni, or it's an 8 strength, it's basically Vilgefortz that doesn't let you draw a card, right? Because if it's disloyal, Menno can target it and destroy it. The new version of Menno Cohorn doesn't simply destroy all disloyals anymore, which I think would be, which is good. It's a good balance change from the last patch because of Infiltrator existing that can toggle the disloyal. He either damages an enemy for 4, or if it's disloyal, he can destroy it. So you can be looking at a giant unit on your side that gets toggled by this 9 strength Infiltrator, and you know what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I like Menno, and yeah, Menno had to change with the Infiltrators. Big fan of the Infiltrators. But one deck that I haven't had a chance to try out, but I really would like to, it seems like a very basic deck, but it's like the Soldier Officer deck that uses the Black Infantry Arbalest, the new Alba Armored Cavalry, and the new Nilfgaardian Standard Bearer. And I think that, you know, these are cards that kind of, they're better if you have like officers and soldiers, and Northern Realms has a little bit of this as well, but it seems like, it's just, they seem like just like value cards, right? They're just, you try to get as much foul as you can from your armored cavalry. It is a three-strength unit where you deploy it. It looks at the top three units in your opponent's deck, and then you can boost the unit by the power of whatever card you see. If you catch a spy there, it can be very strong. In some decks it's good, and some decks probably the matchup makes them quite weak. But, you know, with K-Lock being a great card and an officer, and, Peter is a great card that's also an officer as well. Joaquim DeWet is also an officer. There's a lot of really cool things you can do with officers and soldiers, and I think that I really want to try that. I really want to try that deck out. It seems like that deck's just no one's talking about that deck, and it's got a lot of really cool cards that work with it.
Yeah, I have not seen it, nor have I played it. I actually don't have any idea what you're talking about, because I'm not kidding with you at all. I have not heard of it, so can you, like... I guess I hope that you built it on stream this week, because I like to see it in action because it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's just, you know, you want to set up your standard bearers. So when you play soldiers, basically whenever you play a soldier, the Nilfgaardian standard bearer will boost an ally by two, and you can choose that ally. It's one of those new mechanics where once one card is resolved, this card has an active effect that can trigger after, and you end up making a decision with that card as well. So there is that as well. So you set up your Nilfgaardian standard bearers. You play your soldiers, like the Black Infantry Arbalest right now is a 5-point ping on a 6-strength body if you have an officer in your hand. And there's a lot of great officers you can have in your hand, such as the aforementioned Peter or K-Lock. It seems very simple. It seems like a lot of value plays, but I'd like to see if it actually could stand up to the tempo that some of these other decks can play. Not even really sure who the leader is. I would assume Calvet, since he already kind of really works well with Pikemen and other things like that. But, you know, so many cards are soldiers, and a good amount of cards that you'd run anyway are officers. So you could do some cool stuff with it, I think. But the only thing is, I think there's not a lot of variation. I think you'd probably just want to run a bunch of soldiers and officers, and there might be a hybrid in there somewhere for John Calvet, but I do think it's underrepresented. It may be good. It may not be good. I'll give it a shot.
Sounds good to me, man. Sounds good to me. We're really looking forward to, Commander's Horn 50 is pretty awesome, and is very, very well received in our hearts. And we hope yours as well. And next week, we're going to get a little bit more in depth with the strategy section of episode 51, talking more in depth about these cards and all the new changes with this huge patch we just had.
Yeah, and there's a lot of decks that you can make right now, and we want to do that 5-faction tour like we did last time. So each episode we'll dedicate to a faction. We'll talk about the 5 new cards that the faction received, and we'll talk about the decks that can be built. And you know, by then there may have been a hotfix. The Pro Ladder may have already started up, and I think that we're gonna start seeing things get refined more and more. But I really feel like the options right now are. It's quite diverse right now. It's a little crazy right now because people are still kind of getting their bearings on so many changes. But I think that it's hard to put any faction on a best deck right now. There's a lot of really strong decks. And we're talking about that Pro Ladder where you're going to have to be very, very good with at least 4 out of 5 factions. For your ranking ends up being I want to say an average, but I don't think it's an average. I think it's a sum of the MMR that you attain with each faction. So it's faction-based. Your top 4 factions create your ultimate ranking, and then your placement on the Pro Ladder determines how many crown points you get at the end of the season and if you qualify for specific tournaments. But that Pro Ladder has been delayed. It was supposed to start on September 1st, but it did not, saying that CD Projekt Red wants to make sure everything is perfect before they, quote, get the show on the road. And kudos to them. This must have been a really difficult decision for them to do this, but the feedback is obviously very important to them. The state of the game is very important to them as well. There's no doubt that CD Projekt Red really cares about this game being balanced, competitive. You know, they want to see esports succeed. I definitely do. I have stakes in it as well. But I mean, obviously, we want to see the competitive scene. We don't want people to say that it comes down to coin flip and stuff like that. We want to see a lot of variation in decks, and we want to see like anybody can come with 3 decks that can be wildly different from other decks, and nothing too overpowered. But what do you think about this ultimate decision to delay the Pro Ladder?
Well, I think it's a culmination of a few things. I think it's, number one, CD Projekt Red listens to feedback, and it's, you know, there's been a lot of feedback, I think, specifically about a few archetypes on the, you know, the Gladder ladder since the new patch. And I think that they're obviously concerned about releasing a pro ladder when one faction might be exceptionally powerful and a couple other ones are, you know, imbalanced in other ways. And this was a huge patch, and there was so many cards that were changed. Sure, there was new, you know, 5 new cards per faction, but there were so many card changes that, you know, it started to feel like it was a whole new game. And with the huge things changing with gold balance and that kind of thing, I think they want to just have the balance of the game right before they go into the pro ladder to determine who's going to be at the next Gwent Challenger. So I think that that's, you know, the feedback is the number one thing. And the number two thing is obviously the stats, because CD Projekt Red has statistics on thousands and hundreds of thousands of games, millions of games being played at this point. And yeah, I think that, you know, they're able to pinpoint some issues, and they want to resolve those before we start grinding it out on the pro ladder.
The other thing is, they can't release the pro ladder with one faction. If they had any sort of decision to make about balancing during a season, I think the decision was made: do we want to start pro ladder on September 1st, like we said, and then address some of the issues with balance? That's not the way to do it, because what you'll do is you basically allow people to climb with a faction at one strength level and then change that strength level during the season, which means that people who maybe weren't starting off building up their Scoia'tael ranking, maybe they wanted to start with something else, then they finally get to Scoia'tael. Scoia'tael is in a different state than it was when maybe other players were playing it to get up to the top. And Scoia'tael being very, very strong, a lot of people would benefit from being there on day one, playing Scoia'tael in a very, very strong state to get to the top. And then when it gets changed later, maybe other players might be at a disadvantage because they weren't able to start at that point. It's just a school of thought there that balancing mid-season is probably something that they would like to avoid. So instead of doing that, they're going to delay the pro season from starting. They're going to make some tweaks, I imagine. There are going to be a few changes, but you can't make everybody happy. And I think, like, the idea that there is going to be a hotfix, if you're playing the game, you look at the stuff you don't like and you start to say, oh, well, I don't like this and this and this and this and this and this. All those things are not going to change. You'll be lucky if anything that you don't like is changed, really. I think it's going to be small tweaks here and there because, you know, you can't make everybody happy. Like, everything you think is a problem isn't actually a problem. If you identify, like, we're identifying Scoia'tael as being very strong. A lot of people would agree with you if you think that. But if you think that this is really, like, you know, other cards are very, very strong, and, you know, let's say you believe that Northern Realms is overpowered right now. If that's what you believe, if you believe that maybe some of the things that you can do with armor are super strong, but if that's not identified as a problem, then it's not going to change. And if you are identifying that as a problem and it's not changed, don't let it frustrate you. Just, there are, you know, they're looking at this really closely and they want to get it right. I just don't think you should expect sweeping changes, like 20, 30 changes. I just don't think there's going to be that many changes. I think that maybe Stamelfords might get looked at. A couple of Scoia'tael things might get looked at. But I think, like, really, like, I'd be hesitant to say that anything beyond that is actually going to get looked at. I think there's, like, a Cambi interaction that might be looked at as well. But it's really, really, I think it's going to be a little bit more minor. It's going to be good for the game. It's going to allow us to get into the pro ladder, but it's just, I don't think it's going to be like a whole other patch where, like, everything changes again.
No, and I don't think they have time for that because they want to get the show on the road, as I said. So I wouldn't expect a huge patch either, but, you know, stay tuned and we'll update you as soon as we find out and let you know what we think is going to be really swinging the cards and, you know, hopefully not Scoia'tael's favor again.
Scoia'tael should still be competitive for sure. That's why I think that the tweaks are going to be, they're just not going to be drastic. I think that there might be some key things here and there, but I think, you know, you need to have ideally every faction to be very competitive. They all have ways to win. They have all ways to swing. They all have big plays. They all have really good utility plays and they all have a faction identity, and there's no need to water any of that stuff down. I think the problem might just be some things that are being abused right now. And it's really, I personally don't want them to go overboard. And I know that they want to get everything right, and I trust that they will. So cool. I think we can leave it there. I think that this episode was a lot of big picture stuff, right? We're talking about big picture, Gwen Open reception, new patch reception, and the Pro Ladder reception. But I think we can leave it here. Any closing remarks about kind of the state of Gwent that we're in right now in the Bronze Age?
The Bronze Age, I like that. I think that it's not the monster mash that it used to be, and it's a lot better. And once once we get the show on the road here with the Pro Ladder patch, I think we're really going to be taking a look at Gwent as it will be in its nearest to its final form, I'd say. And that's exciting.
Once again, my friends, we are supported by our commandos, our patrons at patreon.com/commandershorn.
Commandos!
This week, we'd like to thank our newest commandos, Matthias, Marika V, Cynthia R, and Taylor B. Thanks so much for supporting our content, keeping the podcast ad-free, keeping us coming back week after week with the slight break here and there to proudly represent the Gwent community with the best content we can produce. We invite you all to write us emails. Let us know what you think about the current patch, maybe some of the changes you would like to see coming in the hotfix, and your aspirations for Pro Ladder. Email us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can tweet at us at commandershorn.
You can find me at GreyBoxerGwent on Twitter. You can find me on YouTube and Twitch as well as GreyBoxer. I'd like to stream again. I'm thinking about it. I've got the Mahakam suit ready to go. We'll see if that ends up happening again. Although, I got to tune in on Monday for that. And we do record podcasts on Monday. But check me out on Twitter. I'm always tweeting about Gwent. And check me out on Discord, too. You can check us out. Go to the Reddit page, Gwent, r/Gwent on Reddit, and join the Discord there.
Yeah, the link should be there on the sidebar. And always some good discussion happening on the Gwent Discord and the Commanders Horn Discord as well. Mm-hmm. If you are, if you are part of our group, which you can be. And you can find me at McBeardCH on Twitter, McBearded on Twitch, and McBeard on YouTube. This week I am streaming every day at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'm going faction by faction at the moment. We've had a good time with monsters yesterday. That is, today, which is Monday. And tomorrow we're probably going to play some Northern Realms. And we'll see what we get up to for the rest of the week. But it's a great time to play Gwent right now in the new patch. And I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. Congratulations to us. A little pat on the back. Episode 50 feels good. 51, really. 52 if you count the episode 0 that I only showed my friends. But anyway, in any case, whenever you joined us, if you joined us on episode 1 or you joined us today on episode 50, thanks so much for joining us all the same.
Yeah, guys. Thank you, McBeard. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, this is Grey Boxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck.
On the path.